Thank you for joining me, being a part of the show this evening. Andrew Collins, our guest. We're talking about his book, Atlantis in the Caribbean. Andrew Collins has been investigating the idea of an advanced civilization existing before recorded history since 1979, focusing on Southeast Turkey since the early 1990s. He is the co-discoverer of a massive cave complex beneath the Giza Plateau, known as the Collins Caves. We're here talking with him tonight about Atlantis. Before we go back to him and start taking your calls, I did get an email from a listener asking, "Hey, Dave and George, I'm wondering if we can get some amazing paranormal community to send good intentions, vibes, prayers, thoughts, and positive energy to Alberta, Canada. We have tons of wildfires going on. Two cities have now been evacuated. Alberta is in a state of emergency right now, and we are desperately needing rain to make these fires at least manageable for the brave men and women who are risking their lives while fighting for others. Fort McMurray was evacuated on Wednesday, May 5th. The fire has now covered over 150,000 hectares of land, which is about twice the size of our capital city, Edmonton. Please, please have your listeners send good intentions and thoughts of rain our way." All right, that comes from Breanne Campbell. Thank you, Breanne, for writing in, and I'm sure our thoughts and prayers will be out with you and the people of Canada as you're dealing with this brutal fire. I know living here in Minnesota, there's been air quality signs up everywhere saying that, you know, stay inside, be careful. We're getting a lot of the smoke from Canada. And, you know, here down in Minneapolis, Twin Cities area, it's amazing to me that we're being affected that greatly. But I guess it is like hellfire and brimstone the way it's attacking and happening. So if you have a few minutes and you're listening in the audience during break, just focus on Canada, focus on that area in Alberta, and just send the idea of rain, torrential rain, to them to help them snuff out these fires and get control of that area. Please put that effort out, the intention out, and let's see if we can make something big happen with that possibility and the positivity. When we come back, we'll start with your phone calls. We'll talk more about Atlantis. What are some of the possible theories and whereabouts of Atlantis? And where does our guest believe that Atlantis truly lies? We'll talk about that and more when we return to Coast AM. We're back as we talk with our guest, Andrew Collins, regarding the mystery of Atlantis. What are some of the main theories on the whereabouts of Atlantis that have circulated for all these years, Andrew?
Well, the most popular one is that it was somewhere in the vicinity of the Azores Islands. That's a group right in the middle of the Atlantic. And this was first promoted by Ignatius Donnelly in about 1882, I think. And this, for quite a long time, was something that was generally accepted. But then in the 1960s, these ideas were thrown out in favor of the idea that Plato had somehow got his dates wrong, and that instead of talking about years, you know, 9,500 BC, that, you know, back from his own date, which was, what, 350 BC, that somehow he must have been talking about lunar months or something like this. And this and a few other distortions of what he actually wrote led various scientists and writers to believe that the eruption of the island of Thera, Santorini, in the Mediterranean, and the devastation that this caused to the Minoan civilization was the actual story of Atlantis. Now, this took place somewhere around, well, there's various dates, any time between 1600 BC down to around 1350 BC. And this was all nicely convenient. I mean, this was during the Bronze Age. It was at a time when we knew civilization existed in the Mediterranean. And, of course, it also fitted biblical chronology, because many Christians believe that nothing happened in the world prior to 4000 BC. And this was one of the big stigmas, one of the big problems about what Plato said, is that it was outside of the development of humanity and civilization according to the Bible. And even though it shouldn't do, these ideas certainly affected a lot of scientists and writers and historians probably right the way through until, you know, the last 20, 30 years. It's only been this, you're probably in this current, you know, century that we've been able to you know, wash away all these ancient, you know, ideas that civilization started in around 4000 BC. And we can say this through the discovery of incredible high culture complexes like Göbekli Tepe in southeast Turkey, somewhere that I've been investigating and have written books about, that shows us that incredible sophistication, technology, and engineering existed at the very end of the last ice age. And this wasn't just invented overnight. This must have come from pre-existing civilizations. But going back to Atlantis, there are many theories about where it is placed. I mean, it's been placed in the North Pole, at the South Pole, in Southeast Asia, in Turkey, as I said, in Crete or in Santorini, you know, within the Aegean, off the coast of Gibraltar, off the coast of Northwest Africa, and of course the Americas themselves. I mean, there are theories suggesting that South America was Atlantis. I mean, this idea was popular just after the discovery of the Americas at the end of the 15th century. I mean, many writers came, you know, suggested that, you know, the Peruvian culture of the Inca or the other civilizations that they were seeing were remnants of Atlantis. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of these things where it's like the Holy Grail. I mean, obviously, my good friend and colleague Graham Phillips would have been talking about this in the last hour, that, you know, it's an enigmatic thing, that there are probably many answers to the same evidence. And, you know, that's why so many different theories have been allowed to come forth and be written up as articles and books. In fact, I mean, it's estimated that there are many thousands of books and articles on Atlantis, you know, many of them with different theories and ideas. However, I would say that from my own historical work over the last 35 years into the subject, that the best possible candidate for the position of Atlantis is in the area of the Bahamas and the Caribbean. And that if you're looking for an exact match of the way Plato describes Atlantis, it is Cuba.
And are there underwater ruins there to corroborate this idea?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. in 2001, there was reports of a Canadian salvage company by the name of ADC Communications, finding what they consider to be an entire metropolis in deep water off of the west coast of Cuba. Now, this became obviously a very hot subject. Nat Geo, for instance, had a deal where they'd offered these people, you know, millions of dollars, you know, for further investigation. There were other, people wanting to put money into it and whatever. But the problem was getting the evidence that was convincing enough for these deals to actually go ahead. And the people sent down these remote operating videos from the salvage vessel, that the Cuban government was involved, Cuban geologists, and they just could not get the good enough evidence of what was down there, because it was so deep. I mean, we're talking something like 600 to 700 meters, which I'm trying to estimate that. I think it's over 2,000 feet beneath the surface, and it was virtually impossible to get easy evidence. They needed to have sent down, you know, these mini submarines and things like this to properly investigate. The whole thing fell through eventually, and whatever mysteries await discovery off the west coast of Cuba remain today. And I put in this book, you know, the in Atlantis Caribbean, that all of the evidence suggests that Cuba is the main location of Atlantis. The drowned area, the area that actually sank beneath the waves, I think is a memory of the Bahamas and the fact that this was broken up from this single great landmass into the hundreds and thousands of small islands and caves that you see today. This was the memory of the sunken land of Atlantis. But the actual island, the flagship of Atlantis, I'm certain is Cuba. And in the greater scheme of things, I think it's quite fortuitous that Cuba is opening up today as a place where Americans can go for the first time, investment, holidays, vacations, you know, will take place there. And I think further discoveries are now going to be made in that area as people focus their attentions on this incredible island paradise. I mean, you know, Cuba is one of the most beautiful places in the world, but because of the, you know, the regimes there, not just with the Castro government and things like this, which have prevented people looking at this place for the beauty that it is. They've just seen it as this strange grey and red, you know, starred, you know, communist place that you shouldn't even think about for the last, you know, 70 years. And even before that, remember, it was a Spanish stronghold. And for many years, the Spanish colonization of the Americas was seen as abhorrent to many people. And that, you know, this in many ways stopped interest in Cuba being Atlantis back in the 19th century. And then there was obviously a short period of independence where things thrived and, you know, all the cities and the casinos and all the rest of it built up there. And then, of course, we have the communist regime and the Castro thing coming into place at the end of the 1950s. And people then just blanked out Cuba. And now it's opening up for the first time. It's flowering. I think that now the discoveries will finally be made there that will really show us that Atlantis existed, and it existed in the Caribbean.
Let's take a few calls. West of the Rockies, Austin in Pomona, California. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hello?
Yes, Austin, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, what's your question for us this evening?
Well, actually, I was listening to your guest, and I heard about a theory that, well, first of all, has your guest heard of someone named Dr. Ron Joseph by any chance?
I haven't, no.
No? Okay, well, he talks about what you're talking about, and I apologize, I kind of jumped in halfway into the show. He was talking about what you were saying about the meteors that, or a meteor or a series of meteors that crashed onto the Earth around 13,000 years ago. And he was explaining that that these meteors, and anywhere from a few to thousands of them, crashed right on Earth, and that the biggest one of these actually hit over North America, creating an airburst that coincidentally broke open these giant ice dams that then released trillions upon trillions of meltwater into the Atlantic Ocean within a short period of time, within a day. And that would explain a rise in sea level, and in a deluge fashion, you know, within a day, all this water came and submerged, you know, possibly Atlantis within a short period of time. And that also, this would explain other things such as the megafaunal extinction that occurred only in North America. And I just wondered what you thought about that theory.
Well, I think that Ron Joseph was obviously a very clever man. I mean, because I think that he obviously has put together the various components and come up with a very similar idea. I mean, obviously, these ideas are not new. I mean, Ignatius Donnelly, towards the end of the 19th century, he was the first person that really put together the evidence and suggested that a comet or a series of comets was responsible for the destruction of Atlantis and also for the creation of these different myths and legends around the world to do with fire and flood and the return of the ice and things like this. So, you know, the evidence has been there, but the problem has been to try and convince the scientific community that all of this took place. And that's something that has only really been there within the last 10 to 15 years. Scientists now talk in terms of this younger Dryas comet impact event. That's basically what the correct term that they use. And the date that seems to be pretty certain today from carbon 14 evidence and other type of dating techniques is probably around 10,800 BC. But I think what's important here is to say that this was not an event that took place in a single day. It seems as if these wildfires, the floods, obviously the return of the ice, all of this was taking place over a period of several hundred years. Right the way through, probably until about 10,300 BC. And even then, it wasn't over because you still had this mini ice age. And that would seem to have ended abruptly around 9,600 BC, in a matter of a generation. So you've got these huge ice sheets covering large parts of Europe and the North American continent for anything up to something like 2 miles thick. And suddenly they disappear almost with not overnight, I mean, not in a day or so, but probably within a generation. And the smart money is on the fact that another cosmic event possibly ended this Younger Dryas mini ice age as well. So there was another cataclysm, and this second cataclysm is exactly the time frame that Plato gives us, which is, as I said, around 9,500, 9,600 BC for this. So, you know, Plato knew that something had happened. But obviously it's something that others have been on to, Ignatius Donnelly, you know, the person you're speaking about, Ron Joseph, my colleague Graham Hancock has obviously been talking about this. And many of other colleagues and friends of ours have also been writing about it. But only now can all this evidence be put together for the first time and to show exactly how it relates to the Atlantis myth.
We need to take a break. And we'll be talking more with our callers. If you have questions, you can feel free to pick up the phone, give us a buzz, be a part of the show. We'd love to hear from you. And if you're interested in what our guest has been talking about and you'd like to find his book, you'd like to find links to his website, go check out coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com. You'll get all the information, all the great news stories, photographs, videos, all the info is on our site at coasttocoastam.com. Plus, check into becoming an insider. There's a special this month. If you sign up right now, only 99 cents for the month of May 2016. And then you can see why we are the number one in overnight talk radio. Access to 5 years of past archives, access to over 300 episodes of Somewhere in Time with Art Bell, live chats with George Norrie and the other hosts. You get a lot of great bang for your buck. And this is your chance to try it out for 99 cents. Become a Coast Insider this month and give a listen to the past archives. And possibly even incorporate yourself in some of the live chats that we have coming your way. While you're there, also check out beyondbelief.com, George Norrie's TV series, and paranormaldate.com. You've been alone long enough. Now it's time to find your mate by going to the place where people are getting together that have the same interests that you do, that have an interest in ghosts, UFOs, psychic phenomena, conspiracies, monsters, myths, legends, and more. It's at paranormaldate.com. Now 44,000 people strong. It's free to join, and then there's full memberships and more, so go check it out for yourself, and you'll find out what 44,000 other people have found, a great way to meet people just like you. We'll be back with more. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. If you're having a hard time getting through on the phone lines, you can simply email me at dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. And I will try to get to your emails and filter through them while we do the show. All right, we're back, and we'll take a few more calls here. We've got Wildcard Line 2, Eric in Antioch, California. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, yes. Eric. What would you like to ask Andrew?
For taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for Andrew Collins. It's about an underwater ruin that's off the west coast of the United States. A couple of years ago, it was thought to be maybe it was an underwater alien base or something, or UFO base. And what I think it is an old Colosseum from around the time of the last ice age. that is simply filled in with silt over the years. It looks like a giant oval building that has a flat roof, and I think it's just a coliseum that has been filled in with ocean silt over the years. And I'd like to know what Mr. Collins thinks of it.
All right, thank you for calling.
Well, firstly, I am not aware of this ruin at all, but I personally don't think that there's a connection between aliens and Atlantis. I that's something which is probably beyond the remit of our interview today. As to what it might be, well, there are ruins off of the coast of countries all over the world. I mean, certainly, as I say, in the Bahamas and the Caribbean, off the west coast of Spain, northwest Africa, all throughout the Mediterranean, and as I say, everywhere around the world. And all of these are in low-lying areas that were covered over after the last ice age, because what happened is that once all the ice became water again, all that water returned back to the oceans and seas, and they rose up the sea level by anything up to about 300 feet. And this covered anything, not just from the time of the last ice age, but the waters continued to rise right the way through until something like 2000 BC. So a lot of megalithic structures that were off, on the coast of Europe, for instance, are now in anything up to sort of 50 feet of water. So we have to be careful not to associate everything with Atlantis. I mean, what it does tell us is that there is a lot of discoveries to be made on what was previously low-lying regions of countries and continents, where quite clearly, ancient cultures would have built their settlements, they would have built their civilizations, because they would have been near the sea. Obviously, it would have been good for trade, good for food, going out for fish and stuff like this. And this has been the type of culture that has existed since at least probably 15,000 BC. We expect to find this type of ruin. And exactly what they are, well, we have to look at that individually. I mean, sometimes they're going to be domestic dwellings. Sometimes they could be ritual buildings, maybe temples, things like this. And who knows? There could be coliseums out there. We don't know.
All right, let's take our final break. We'll come back with more of your calls here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. My guest, Andrew Collins, as we discuss Atlantis and take your calls. Wildcard, line one, William in Madison, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Before
Certainly.
I get to what I want to say, I wish to mention a possible root base of word Atlantis. It is Finnish, a lot of Finns north of Minneapolis, up in northeastern Minnesota. Etelälänteen, meaning southwest, hence land to southwest of northern Europe, possibly near Cuba. In any case, on my land, 100 miles north of Duluth, Minn, is the remnant outlet ravine mouth of ancient glacial Lake Agassiz, the largest lake that ever existed. It covered from 100 miles north of Duluth or all the way to Winnipeg, Canada, 250 miles wide and length. On the property is a ridge that held back the once mega lake. On that ridge is a huge boulder, 30 feet by 30 feet inside, and a yellowish 20-inch by 20-inch, 5-inch flat rock. It has inscribing marks. When did that rock plate get there? Was it sent there, flown by a meteorite hitting the earth somewhere? And what civilization created that rock? It's an interesting question that I've always pondered, and I'm glad that you took my call, because I believe that I have property that has some evidence of a huge catastrophe that's left on that ridge on my property, 100 miles north of Duluth, Minnesota, and perhaps somebody someday will get in touch with me and we can go and see that. Nobody can get there now because there's no road to it. I have to walk 2 miles, and I'm 82 years old, just to get to it. So it's an interesting place, and I don't know what else I can say, but I'll tell you.
Andrew, do you have any thoughts on any of this, Andrew?
That was an absolute fascinating story, and I think that the gentleman's right, that in many ways is a remnant of the cataclysm that caused the destruction of Atlantis. I mean, that boulder was almost certainly carried with the water, the meltwater that came out of Lake Agassiz and that was pushed south, you know, along with thousands, hundreds of thousands of other similar boulders that were carried along with the faults of the water and deposited at different places, you know, obviously when the water began to get weaker and weaker and mm-hmm. would just deposit all these huge, great boulders. And that's why you see these boulders completely out of place, out of context. It wasn't simply the ice that brought them there. It was the meltwaters that had placed them there once that lake was, you know, that was breached. And almost certainly that occurred around 10,800 BC as part of this much greater cataclysm. So when he looks at that boulder, he can say that definitely was a remnant of the same cataclysm that destroyed Atlantis. So that's a fascinating story.
Laura Love emails in and she says, if there are so many civilizations underwater, how will you know when you actually find Atlantis?
Well, that's actually a very good story, and it goes back to what I said earlier about trying to find the Holy Grail, because, you know, there is no envelope that you can open or signpost that you can find that says, you know, this is it, you have found Atlantis. and I think that all we can do is to look at what Plato states and try as best we can to find something that resembles this metropolis, this great citadel that he finds. Now, whether it existed, I don't know. I think that what he did with his dialogues is to fabricate a story based around legends and mythology that he was hearing within his world. Remember, he was a philosopher, and philosophers debate. They debate the topics of interest to them. And this would have included what laid across the ocean, what laid on the other side of the Atlantic. It would have included the stories about these great islands with navigable rivers that were you know, that had these ruins, that had these cities. And I think that he used all of this to weave together and create his dialogues, which, let's point out here, I think it's important to remember that these dialogues are fictional. They're almost like the X-Files of their day. You know, and of course, when we look at something like the X-Files, we know it's fiction, but we also know that it contains a kernel of truth in everything that it says. And I think that we always need to be aware of that. And that just like the Holy Grail and the story of King Arthur, yes, there's a historical mystery here, but these have been all woven together to create the romance that we are aware of today. And we should never, you know, mistake the fact that we're dealing with two different things, you know, historical evidence and also romance brought together.
All right, let's go to east of the Rockies. David, Baltimore, Maryland, you're on the air.
Good morning. Long time listener, going back to the Art Bell days. I have a question for your guest.
Please.
You already mentioned Peru, Bolivia, and I was just wondering if he's found any evidence that the Mesoamerican civilizations are remnants of Atlantis, and secondly, what are his thoughts on the Bimini Wall?
Okay, yes, good questions. Well, firstly, obviously, Peru and Bolivia, you have these high civilizations there, the Inca and the pre-Inclan civilizations. Now, these are on the Andes. The Andes obviously borders the coastal region of the Pacific. The Pacific is not the Atlantic. So because we know that Plato specifically places his Atlantic island called Atlantis in the Atlantic Ocean. There is no absolute direct connection. Plus, we know that the civilizations of Peru and Bolivia officially don't go back any earlier than perhaps, you know, 1,000 to 2,000 BC. Of course, there's much speculation and theories that places like Tiwanaku, you know, that could have been destroyed in some kind of cataclysm going back to the age of Atlantis. And that there may be some evidence in that. However, if that's the case, we're dealing with a different civilization, but perhaps that was destroyed by the very same mechanism as Atlantis. In other words, the Younger Dryas comet impact event. But the other possible link with Atlantis here is that when Plato was writing down his dialogues, I think that some of the information that he had relating to these civilizations and cities did actually come from the stories entering the Mediterranean world of great cities like Tiwanaku and the Incas and things like this, or the pre-Incas, I should say, that these were the stories and rumors that he used to weave and create this account of Atlantis. I mean, he used many different sources. I mean, some of the accounts of the city of Atlantis, I think, are based on cities that did exist within the Mediterranean world. You know, so but he could weave together whatever story he wanted. As I pointed out earlier, his dialogues are fiction. They were fictional dialogues between people, you know, who were placed together discussing matters of the day across a table or in a room or whatever they were doing. So we have to be aware that there is going to be some fictional accounts.
Elements, right.
Dialogues.
All right, let's go to wildcard line 3. Michelle, Seattle, Washington, you're on the air with Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, I actually had a prospect and a question. Prospect was, what if Atlantis didn't, you know, the water didn't go up, the Atlantis actually went down, you know, a meteor impact could have easily dropped it into any catacombs or anything like that if they were going down to their own Earth. The second one was, have you looked into the Hudson Bay as a meteor impact zone because of the shape and the trailing islands that are above northwest of that?
Right, okay, yeah. Second part first, then, the Hudson Bay. Yes, absolutely. The Hudson Bay area almost certainly is one of the main impact areas of the Younger Dryas comet. This has been brought out by people like Richard Firestone of Berkeley Laboratory, University of California, in the work that he's done with all of his colleagues over the last 10 years. So, yeah, that's where they're looking for the main impact site. However, it does look as if other impact craters may exist in the West Atlantic Basin to the north of the Bahamas. And of course, mm-hmm. if there was an impact in the water there, it would have completely drowned the Bahamas and the Caribbean at this time.
Only absolutely. The wave itself would have just taken the entire coast out.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And therefore, only a few people would have survived this, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And this is exactly what the myths and legends tell us. That come from both the Bahamas and the Caribbean itself, that only a few people survived, those that went to the highest mountains, a few people, it says, entered into caves and went, and the waters rose up, took everything, and that afterwards, you know, they were the only ones left to repopulate the islands. But as far as the idea of Atlantis sinking, yes, that is exactly what Plato says. However, he says a lot about Atlantis, and some of it is quite contradictory. I mean, for instance, at one point he says that Atlantis is the size of Africa and Asia combined. Now, I mean, that's an impossible size. I mean, that you know, even if you try to place that in the Atlantic Ocean. It would fill it completely. You know, it wouldn't be an island or even a continent sitting in it. It would be too large.
What if it was North and South America?
As I said, these are dialogues. These are fictional dialogues. He could say what he liked. And as I said, sometimes he was contradictory. But I do believe that the sunken lands of Atlantis were the Bahamas. And that the remaining parts of it that remained above the ground afterwards is the larger islands like Cuba and, of course, Hispaniola, Puerto Rico, and, of course, places like Andros Island. As I mentioned earlier, my colleagues Greg and Laura Little have found a number of different underwater archaeological structures, particularly off Andros Island, the largest of the Bahamas. And this includes what appear to be breakwaters, quays that formed part of ancient docks and ports. And also, the most exciting discovery over the last 10 years is what's known as Brown's Ruins, after the name of the people that found this. And this is something that was discovered on the west coast of the former Bahaman landmass. To the south of the island of Bimini. And this is a huge, great area of massive cyclopean blocks that seem to be in a tear shape stretching towards the south, with an area at the northern end of very much larger flat stones that seems to be almost like the top of what you would find at a Mayan pyramid or something like this. And from the actual shape of this structure, it seems to have been struck by a tsunami coming in from the north. And this would fit perfectly with the idea that one fragment of the comet struck just to the north of the Bahamas and caused this type of devastation.
Andrew, thank you so much for your insight and information tonight. Also, a special thanks to our guest, Graham Phillips. Joshua Brandon, remember, Houdini and Doyle airs tomorrow, Monday, on Fox. Check it out. And again, special thanks back to Jeff and Donna at the home office, Tim Dennis, my engineer here in Minneapolis, Chris Boros, my production manager, Lisa Lyon, and, of course, the great George Norrie. Thank you for joining me. I'll be back with you the first weekend in June. I'm Dave Schrader, host of Darkness Radio, and you've been listening to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM.